Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. The cable sports network ESPN last week announced that early next year, the signature airtime of the network's signature show, SportsCenter, will get new hosts. Michael Smith and Jemele Hill have worked together as co-hosts of the sports and variety talk show His and Hers for the past 2 years. It's a show that began as a podcast.
The network says Smith and Hill will preside over a reimagined version of SportsCenter, which airs at 5 p.m. Central. The two were in Milwaukee this spring to give the Axthelm Lecture in Sports Journalism at Marquette University, and they came by the Lake Effect Studio as well. Michael Smith explained that His and Hers really evolved from the strong friendship that exists between the two hosts.
Yeah, the podcast was really a result of years and years of wanting to work together. We always had, we've known each other since 2002. Jemele tells our meeting story better than I do, so I'll say that for her. But we've known each other since 2002. We both came up as print journalists. We were around the same age. And frankly speaking, I mean, there aren't many, still aren't as many, but back then there were fewer minority journalists, let alone African-American female sports writers in the country. So we naturally, you know, gravitated toward each other. And we remained friends and admired each other's work from afar and would run into each other on the road here and there. But somewhere along the line, we started to find ourselves in Bristol, Connecticut, together more often at the same time. So we just hang out, have dinner. And, you know, just the friendship grew. And we wanted to do something together, some way we could take our phone conversations, which would start in sports and end up in pop culture or politics or news or relationships or whatever, and make that into a show. Well, nobody was exactly, you know, falling over themselves to make that happen. So we decided to start a podcast, and people liked it. And eventually, John Skipper, the president of ESPN, was like, why are y'all still calling this show Numbers Never Lie? You might as well call it His and Hers after the podcast and streamline them. So.
Well, but I'm sure it is not as easy as just taking those phone conversations and those email back and forths and recording them. There's a lot more that goes into it, which I would imagine is a big misconception people have.
Well, people have that misconception about television in general, and I'm sure even about what you do. Like, they think you just sit down and talk. But yeah, I mean, we certainly have, we put a lot of thought into it, and it's probably the way our show operation works. It's probably very few talent at ESPN that is as involved as we are in our own show. And from the topic bars to the actual content, we both had a vision for how we want the show to be. And so it's very important to us, especially with our face and likeness in the show, that it really represent, you know, who we truly are. So for us, I mean, the people ask, like, oh, what's your typical day like when you do the television show? And I'm like, well, it really doesn't end. I mean, it's a constant process of thinking about angles and stories and reading things. And so it's, even as we're here now, I mean, we're still thinking about things that we may potentially talk about when we get back. So it is a nonstop, you know, process. And, you know, television, for anybody who does it over a period of time, I mean, it's a grind. And every day you have to be on. We can't afford to come into a show and not perform.
There's never a moment where she's checked out on the show or she's mailing it in. And I like to think the same goes for me. And so, you know, our process is a lot different, and I say a lot more intense. And it's not to pat ourselves on the back. It's just that, you know, this is our baby. You know, we are not a couple, contrary to popular opinion. Never have been a couple. Maybe could have been in another life, but never have been a couple, have not dated. I'm married with three kids. She is the apple of many a man's eye across the country. But this is our baby. And so our process is, you know, from the moment we open our eyes to, you know, the time we go to bed at night, we're constantly tinkering.
I've heard that you really try to steer clear of the term debate, though, the idea that you're debating. What turns you off about that term?
Where'd you hear that?
I may have done my research.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, he's got connections,
I guess. Yeah, wow. You take that one.
Well, it's not that debate is necessarily a dirty word, but we like to think that we really do pay attention to the nuance of discussions. It's sports, where sports talk is in general. It's like it's got to be a hero and a villain. It's got to be a right and a wrong. And sometimes it's just not that simple. And so I think for us, especially considering there's this perception that at ESPN that we do whatever we can to create debate and create controversy. And it's like, no, we like to have actual conversations. And so it's not that it's necessarily a dirty word, but I think given that we as a network have been criticized for certain commentary shows. I mean, I'll just say it because of First Take. People have had this idea that, you know, okay, this is the type of show that they want, and they are wildly successful. But, you know, they're in their own lane, and they've created that lane. And just because they have done that, that doesn't mean every single show that comes after that, or even some of the shows that preceded it, that doesn't mean that we're all following the same blueprint. You know, part of the reason why I think people were very hesitant about putting Mike and I together, or didn't see this as something that could be successful, is, you know, we're both around the same age, as he mentioned, African-American print journalists, our background, because aesthetically, we look like we would agree all the time. People thought that that's what kind of conversation we would have. And it turns out, as much as we're like-minded in terms of how we approach stories and other things, we disagree about a lot of things, you know, and it's not that, you know, we try to disagree or we try to, you know, architect some debate and,
right,
you know,
it's not, contrived.
It's not contrived at all. But there is room for, even in sports talk where you have to have a winner and a loser, we like to think there's a significant amount of room there left for layered, nuanced discussions.
I think debate just puts you in a box. For me, I'll just say it, like, I don't like being compared to any other show because there is no other show like ours. There is no other Jemele Hill. There is no other Michael Smith. And there certainly is no other relationship like ours. There may be other people on our air or anybody else who have a nice chemistry. I'll take the Pepsi Challenge with anybody's chemistry, anybody's ability, anybody's versatility, anybody's sense of humor, timing, whatever you want to call it. So when people try to put us in that debate show box, I think it's selling us short for what we do. We have discussions. We tell jokes. We're very video-based.
We do skits.
we're part-time actors,
yeah.
Comedians. Our interviews are top-notch, we'd like to think. I mean, we certainly are growing and have room for improvement, but we don't just sit down and do battle to try to see who can be right. You know, because there is no right or wrong. There's only opinion. So, you know, somebody may agree with Jemele. That doesn't make them right, and vice versa. That's not what it's about. We're not there to show one another up. We're not entering into an arena like gladiators. That's not what this is. And I think, you know, over the last few years, I think people in general, the viewer has sort of, the ratings may belie this, but I think the viewer has kind of gotten tired of the manufactured debate, the talking head, you know, saying things for the shock value. And I'm not necessarily pointing fingers at any particular individuals, but that's just not who we are. We're just Mike and Jemele, two fun-loving friends, you know, who like to have a good time with each other. And if that's your type of television show, join the party.
Well, let me ask you, what do you make of the criticism that a lot of the sports media gets, ESPN for sure, but not just ESPN, that you've been sort of complicit in creating a monster, that while the journalists might know there are things wrong with big-time sports, the networks are so wrapped up in it that they're not in a position to hold the league's feet to the fire to make the changes that are needed.
So glad you asked that question. One of the biggest misconceptions going. Now, look, are there high-level conversations that take place between network executives way above our pay grade and league commissioners, lawyers, whoever, about coverage, about commentary? I'm sure. And maybe ours just hasn't been loud enough. I don't know. But I can tell you, nobody has ever come to us and tried to manipulate or discourage or, you know, silence us on any issue. And I don't know of any other talent at ESPN that's actually dealt with it. I think people try to create martyrs out of some of our departed colleagues. And that's not the case. Like, nobody says you can't criticize Roger Goodell. There are people at ESPN, ourselves included, who have criticized Roger Goodell, who have criticized the NFL, who have criticized the NBA. We call it like we see it. If the day that somebody tries to tell us what we can and can't say, we'll find another place to work. I think our objective is just to always be fair. Now, if the viewer doesn't think that we are going as hard as they would like at a certain individual or entity, maybe that's because we don't see it that way. But we're not afraid. We don't pull any punches when it comes to our commentary on anybody across the sports landscape. Yeah, do we make for strange bedfellows when we have broadcasting rights with you know every network, every sports league and colleges and what have you? Yeah, absolutely. And I can see why the conflict of interest would come into question. But that has not trickled down to us. Now, again, maybe the powers that be aren't listening closely enough. I don't know. Right. But we've never felt like, oh, we can't say that because, you know, we're Disney and or, you know, the NFL, we have Monday Night Football, so they might get mad. It's never crossed our mind.
Yeah, and the conversations that do make their way to us, they're usually just about things you would have in any newsroom about responsibility and fairness.
Mm-hmm.
Accuracy, yeah. Like, which takes place all the time. I think especially these days, as I like to call them, the outrage police, they're constantly handing out tickets to people. And I think a lot of it is that ESPN is low-hanging fruit. And as viewers, I think they're sometimes, they are probably confused by our roles because they have the broadcast partners on one end and we televise these games and we play a lot of money for them. And then you have the journalistic arm and then you have the entertainment arm. And those hats are constantly, you know, switching. Mike and I laugh all the time and joke that we're former journalists. I mean, we're always journalists, but we do realize that part of our job every day at noon, Eastern, that is, ESPN2, is to entertain people.
That's the E in ESPN.
Exactly. And so, but that doesn't make us less accurate or less fair. Like, those journalistic principles that we were raised on still mean, you know, quite a bit to us. Look, I think in general, people just imagine ESPN as this kind of corporate place where we're muzzled constantly
right.
and told what to
right.
say. And it's like, it just doesn't work that way. And yeah, I mean, there are certain things that we know are frowned upon, not necessarily what we say about, you know, broadcast partners, but like ESPN on ESPN Crime, which seems to titillate everybody.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, it's not really as serious as you think it is. Like, there is nobody saying, like, well, you can't say this or that. And so I think a lot of it is just people just have this idea built up in their minds about how things operate there. And it couldn't really, in most cases, be further from the truth.
People are also very lazy, quite honestly. And by that, I mean a lot of the critics. And a lot of the critics, whether they're in mainstream media or social media, actually just don't do their research. Now, I'm not even talking about coming to Bristol and interviewing people. I'm talking about watching television. Because one of our pet peeves, I know I rail about it all the time, is when somebody says, well, nobody knows who that is, or nobody's talking about this. No, you just haven't heard it.
Right.
Because if you're going out and saying, well, nobody at ESPN, why isn't anybody talking about this? Because people can fire off a tweet with no accountability. People, Jamel and I would both say, well, you must have missed the show today when we discussed this.
Right.
And the latest example, prime example, there was a big controversy. I mean, because one of our biggest properties, obviously, is SportsCenter, Mike and Mike, College Game Day, you know, and Monday Night Football. Mike and Mike, you know, our friend and colleague, Bomani Jones, wore a polarizing, controversial, but rather clever Caucasians T-shirt. It was a takeoff of the Cleveland Indians on Friday. We talked about it in our show, gave it props, laughed at the controversy it caused. We gave it two thumbs up. We immediately get, oh, ESPN told y'all not to talk about the T-shirt?
Like, or you like, clearly didn't watch the show
we did. You know, but people, so I'm saying that that's just a microcosm of a larger issue where people paint ESPN with this broad brush, like we're all saying the same things all the time. I think it's a product of just being so massive.
You get the feeling that a lot of people are walking around with their own personal focus groups, and if they don't hear
their focus
groups.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
yes.
the perfect way to put it.
Who do you think you're most trying to reach with His and Hers? I mean, you're on at noon, and
yeah.
you know, we're having this conversation in the studio. Our show airs at 10. It's
mm-hmm.
it's sort of a strange wilderness in the middle of the day.
Big time.
Who's paying attention?
Well, you know what? That's interesting you say that, because I mentioned the time slot earlier when we follow, you know, First Take on ESPN2 now. Or even just being on ESPN2, which is obviously, you know, not in as many homes, doesn't have the same reach as ESPN. I think technology has allowed that concern, has alleviated that concern in many respects, because it feels like we have a pretty significant DVR crowd.
Yeah.
Both our original podcast and the show is available on iTunes, like, and on ESPN.com, and on the app immediately after the show. So we're more accessible than that noon to 1 hour. Our biggest fight that we've had to battle lately is the disassociation with YouTube. no more ESPN content is available on YouTube. That really hurt us because we were able to put our stuff, you know, on the internet for people to see in case they missed it. We both have pretty healthy Twitter account following, so we'll post clips and videos from the show. We're not going to reach the same amount of people as we would if we were in the afternoons on ESPN naturally. But I think slowly but surely the word is getting out that we are the best 60 minutes of your day. And if you're not at home and able to catch it at noon, then you can catch the re-air in the afternoons a lot of days. You could DVR it. But a lot of people watch it at work or in class.
Yeah.
We're not condoning that kind of thing.
But we're not necessarily discouraging it either.
We like to think we make it worth your while,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and it is, there are certain challenges that you face. And for us, I think the relevancy of the show is where we make our sort of biggest, where we've made such a huge jump. It's like, yep, people know the show. They may not always get to see it every day. And as Mike mentioned off air, it's like, look, when you go meet the president of the United States and he knows your show,
right,
then I'm good with whatever the ratings say.
We kind of answered the how many are we reaching, but you asked the who are we reaching. And we don't know who that looks like. I mean, because we like to think we appeal to everybody. Mm-hmm. Now, you know,
have some certain demographic information.
Well, I was about to say the casual person will just on the surface say, oh, well, you know, you're two black people, so you must appeal to black people. Well, I would like to think so, but we're not limited to just appealing to black people. Our conversations, while they may come from an African-American perspective, can certainly be appealing to all races, all ages. Like, we skew younger. There's a maturity to us where adults, they may not get all of our current references, but it's not like our conversations are immature by any stretch. I mean, I think we're respected in that space as well.
Have you thought of subtitles for your older viewers?
Well, you know what?
And it's funny.
But that's kind of what I'm getting at and what Jamel's talking about. It's like a long time ago, we stopped concerning ourselves with, you know, appealing to everybody. You understand? We want to do that naturally. So we're not trying to be all things to all people is what I'm getting at. We want to be the best that we can be for the people who watch our show. You know, I don't know how many people actually noticed this that watch the show, but we scrapped introductions a long time ago. We no longer say, welcome to His and Hers. I'm Michael Smith. She's Jamel Hill. We immediately start the conversation the moment the show starts. And part of the reason we do that is, hey, if you're tuning into this show, you already know who we are. And if you don't, you'll find out very quickly. But it's very much a club, and it's a party. And will we like more people at our party? Sure. But we also realize, as Jamel mentioned earlier, we're not everybody's cup of tea, so everybody's not going to want to come to our party. So the only people we're concerned about having enough food for, enough good music for, enough, you know, comfortable space for, is the people who come to the party. We're not trying to evolve or change who we are, or how we talk about sports, or the references we make, or how we do things to accommodate a larger audience. We're worried about the fans and serving the fans that we do have. So we're worried about who are we trying to reach? The people who get it.
Yeah, it's an analogy I think we've heard before around ESPN. Are you trying to be McDonald's, a billion served, or are you okay with being the critically acclaimed restaurant on the corner?
The hamburger joint.
The
right?
hamburger joint where you can only get this type of burger at this place and you love it and you'll keep coming back, but it won't be billion served. So it's like, but I think that's not unusual for any show.
Right.
Because there are times when I watch Chris Berman and I don't get anything he's saying. Right. But nobody's telling him to stop it. And for the people that love Chris Berman, it works.
At this point, we can't worry about the people who don't get us. You know what I mean? The people who do, they really do.
And if you're not McDonald's, at least you're not Chipotle.
There's
See,
that too.
I take that as a sign of disrespect.
I've always told her that it goes Moe's, Qdoba, Chipotle in my
I told him he's wrong. Yeah. Although I can't win the argument now given all the controversy around Chipotle.
That was kind of where I was going.
I was like, I can't win that argument.
Well, Michael Smith, Jamel Hill, thank you so much.
No, I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And, you know, our show ends at 11, so people can turn off their radios and go straight to their TV.
Yes.
Jamel Hill and Michael Smith are, for now, co-hosts of His and Hers on ESPN2, but beginning in February, the day following the Super Bowl, they'll take over as new hosts of ESPN's flagship SportsCenter show, airing at 5 p.m. Central Time. We spoke with them in April when they were in town to speak at Marquette University.